I have got to give credit to my guy, the D-Train Diesel, a.k.a. Kerosene, for getting a genuine laugh out of me with the What's Coming Up promo that they've got running right now, where he says Bill Belichick is just a teenager in love. And we're the parents telling him we don't like his girlfriend.
It was well done. I mean, we listen to, because we've been in radio so long, if we both perk up at the same time, like,
that's pretty good.
Because you hear it, but you don't hear it half the time because you hear things so many times. It stood out. It was and very accurate.
It's very fair. Because that is a good portion of the story, right? It is every movie, TV show you've ever watched where the old character gets a very much younger than them partner. And some of those times, it turns out that they actually really do care for each other. And then there's other times that it's like, not so much. There's something else going on. And I think the story here, because there is new Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson news to talk about here on the TMZ Sports Show. That is not the name of the show. It's TRBS Sports Show. The Rob Brown Show, as a matter of fact, here on the Fan Upstate. Welcome back. There's new news ongoing in the Belichick story. And I'm at the point now, I asked earlier in the week, how many of y'all care about the story? And the reaction was like 50-50. There was a large group of y'all who texted the Hub City Spartanburger text line and said, Rob, I could not care less. And then there was a large group of y'all that texted the Hub City Spartanburger text line at 844-326-3663 and said, I absolutely love it. I love the drama. I can't stay away from it. I don't know what the demographic split on that is because the text doesn't tell us what the demo of the texter is. I imagine that there are at least some level of people who aren't maybe day-to-day consistent football people who are in on this story because it is so drama-filled.
The wrestling fan in me loves it because this is definitely like a thing in wrestling. The other part of me that's non-ageist and doesn't care, is like, it's not really a story, whatever. Hopefully they're really in love and good for them. Sometimes
I'm just a teenager in
love. Wow, dude. Talk about a data reference.
Yeah, that's real say, old.
Love can overcome all boundaries, even like 50 years. I think it's 50 years.
Dion DiMucci is the artist who sang Teenager in Love.
Wow.
There's a thing you all know that you did not know you were going to know today.
Here's the thing. He just went by Dion. He dropped the last
name. He dropped the DiMucci?
Yeah, Dion is pretty famous. The DiMucci part, not so much.
Dion DiMucci. All right. So anyway, point here is, I have given you the angle on why this story is compelling to me. And now there's new conspiracy theories out there because... And I had this conversation yesterday with, day before yesterday, with a friend of the show, Joey B. He and I were talking about this a little bit. We were talking about the fact that for some reason, Pablo Torres has become like the media face of this story. Pablo was the one who dropped a few days ago the news, or maybe not, that Jordan Hudson had been banned from the UNC football facilities. Of course, a few hours later, UNC would drop a statement that says, that's not true. Jordan Hudson is welcome at the facilities. Pablo would then go on a little bit later and say, no, my reporting was good. They changed directions after the reporting. They changed up their directive after the reporting. So I don't know which of the two is true. I brought this up to friend of the show, Joey B. We were having a conversation about it. And Joe said, Pablo, as I did on the, what was it, last Friday that this story broke? Pablo has spent a very long time building up a pretty solid foundation of credibility when it comes to sports talking. Pablo, amongst those who consume an irresponsible amount of sports content, Pablo is considered a pretty trustworthy source.
He's another one of those guys that puts too much politics into everything, and it just, I don't care about your politics. Just talk about the sports.
I mean, again, that's fine. Don't consume the media. But for those of us that do.
And I don't because of that. I liked him until he started doing all that stuff. And it's like, okay, right, whatever, dude. Just another one falling in lines with everyone who thinks they got to talk about their politics when I want to come here to escape that.
But I mean, anyway. Again, all well and good. Not every show is for everybody.
But because of that, it makes me doubt him as soon as I hear he's the one who did it.
Why?
Because of his politics.
Because of his political stance or because he talks about politics?
Because politics is his main deal. When you think of him, you think politics first, then you think sports. If I thought sports was dabbling in politics, Stephen A. Smith, sports first, then politics. That's kind of changing now, but for the most part, that's lately as his run gets more serious. But when I think, whatever, dude, it's not me doing it. Anyway, that's him. When you know him for your politics first and then your sports second, that doesn't appeal to me. So when I hear that, immediately I think negatively because I'm thinking, okay, what's the politics behind it? Not what's the sports behind it.
I think that when sports talk host involve politics in their conversation. Number one, it is the way that you and I involve movies or video games or wrestling or whatever. It's just that's a thing that they care about and are passionate about. It works in. But I also think that
not as polarizing as politics.
Irrelevant to the reaction to the topic, that's the thing that they are passionate about, right? And for guys like us on a neutral entity like a radio program, yeah, we are kind of discouraged from polarizing our audience. Podcast guys, quite the opposite, right? And the example would be, and this is not a shot, the example would be Clay Travis and Outkick the Coverage. That dude does more politics and sports than anybody else in the game.
By the way, I want to point out consistency. I've seen a few things of his, but because politics are so much in front for him, doesn't interest me.
Fair enough.
It's not about one side or the other. It's just a politics, period.
I'm fine with that. I think Travis is the opposite view. Jake Crane and Co. That same thing. A lot of politics injected into their show.
I don't know who that is. So
Jake Crane is a regular guest on Wire to Wire. Was a regular guest on Mark Ryan's show when he was here. Crane and Co. has become a very large online sports podcast format that does a lot of conservative politics in their sports. I think what it comes down to for most of us, and then I'll get back to kind of what I was leading off with the Belichick thing here. I think for most people, and I'm not saying this is about you, Lonzo, I'm saying in general my experience
You did just point to me while you said that. But okay.
Well, it's the royal you. You just happen to be in front of me. I think for most people who disagree, people who have a differing political view and put it on a sports show are injecting too much sports, and people who share a similar sports or political view that put it into their sports show, that's a little more welcome. That's just where we are as a country. If you disagree with me politically, you hate America. If you disagree with me politically, you're a fascist. Like, that's just where we are.
Yeah,
all right?
I disagree with you. So
that's fine. I listen to the news at night. Like, I'm online. I can't say what I was about to say, but you know what I was about to say.
No, okay? Actually, I don't because I try to stay out of that realm. I just do. I mean, I think that has its place and it's very important, but I don't think it belongs in sports.
I'm not just talking about in sports. I'm saying the vibe of America right now is we have created this political world.
This is winning.
Where if you disagree with me, either if you're on that side, you're a fascist, and if on that side, you hate America, and there's no middle ground anymore.
All I know about you is you don't like globalists. I only know that because you told us.
No. I am a globalist. Remember? I am a globalist.
That's what Kane said. I can remember. Oh, okay. Fine.
Yeah, I am a globalist. All right, now
back
to—
Do you think Bill Belichick's a globalist?
I do not. Back to Bill Belichick. Back to where this started. The drama is for those of us who like drama. And I've said before, every one of you who likes sports likes drama. We like sports because of drama. The games that are the most entertaining games that we watch are the games that are filled with drama. You like drama. Now, your drama may come in the form of athletic competition, but you like drama. And there's obviously a lot of drama to this story. The drama that is breaking right now is that Pablo did a deep dive, because remember, the whole thing about that interview that caused all of this most recent ruckus is that the interviewer asked Hoodie to tell the story of how he and Jordan met, and she shut that down. Like, that's on tape. She shut that down. She said from the other side of the room, we're not talking about this. So Pablo, I guess, decided, well, there's something fishy about that. There's something funky about that. I want to look into it. So he went and he looked, and he found what he believes to be the date of Bill Belichick signing that philosophy book that was allegedly the first time that the two of them met. And he says that based on a series of other data points, that he believes that Bill Belichick and Jordan met before, a year before, a full year before they claim that they did meet. And there's some weirdness with the dates there. But the point isn't so much about the meeting as the whole concept of the story that they've told, if Pablo is correct, is based on either they just have the date that they met wrong, or they've lied about it for one reason or the next. I continue to circle back to, I don't care about any of the relationship drama. Do I find it in a weird way interesting? Yeah, the same way that I find interesting, like, the dating life of Ted and Robin on How I Met Your Mother. Cheap surface value entertainment and drama. Even if they are real people, not fictional reality TV show characters. But it does have a reality show vibe to it. And this reality show vibe is enhanced when you've got a university that is doing something original, that is doing something unique, that is doing something different with the goal of getting out front of the new wave of college football, the new vibe of college football, doing something to get out front of the professional style of college football. So they go get the most successful pro head coach of all time and bring him in to run that program as if it is an NFL team. And now it turns out that, it feels like, Bill Belichick's not actually running his own life at this point. If he can't run his own life, how do I expect him to show up and run the team? But now there's a new conspiracy theory that is floating around right now. Because on a couple of different shows, Pablo and others who cover this football team have been asked, is there a possibility that Bill Belichick never coaches a game for the University of North Carolina? That this becomes such a distraction, problem, issue, whatever. Because Jordan apparently got invited to participate on Dancing with the Stars. And she turned him down. And the reason she turned him down, according to reports, is because she is currently focused on other television opportunities. And there is speculation that one of those opportunities is a show that centers on her and her relationship with Bill and their relationship with UNC football.
Where does speculations like this come from? Do people just go, you know what I think it is, and they just make it up?
I don't think so. I think it is relatively evident at this point, at least to me, and you can disagree with me, but I think based on what we know and the actions of Jordan Hudson, including the ones that she has admitted to, the ones that Bill has talked about, the ones the university's talked about, and the ones that there have just been reports about, Jordan Hudson is very clearly utilizing her time with Bill to build some sort of media legacy, whether it's as a TV person or producer, director, whatever. Again, it's kind of one of those things where a lot of this is smoke, but you know the old expression about smoke. Don't do it, kids. It's bad for it. No! Where there's smoke, there's fire. The rumor, remember Hard Knocks, which is not doing an off-season NFL series this year, was going to do UNC Hard Knocks. They were going to do Hard Knocks College, and they were going to follow Bill to UNC. And then that got killed out of the blue, and the heavy rumor floating around Chapel Bill is that Jordan's the one that killed it off. She was like, no, we're not doing this.
See, I never believed that for a second because this is a man known for cheating a bunch of different ways in football. Why would he want a camera crew in there?
Maybe fair.
I'm just saying.
Maybe fair. There's enough rumors going around, and on top of that, we do know, because it's been registered and discovered, that since she started dating Bill, Jordan has fired up a media company. A media consulting company. So there's at least some level of truth to the rumor that she is trying to start some sort of media thing. She turned down Dancing with the Stars allegedly because she was looking for other TV opportunities. The rumors started coming out after that it's she wants to get involved in reality TV show. Could that mean that it's not going to be Hard Knocks? Maybe there's another style of show around her and Bill that she has more control over than she would have with Hard Knocks? I don't know. But Bill came out yesterday and sternly said that Jordan is not around or involved with his running of the football team right now. And my favorite part is, after I heard that, I went and looked at some of the major UNC websites. None of their fans believe it. None of their fans believe that. All the goodwill of Bill Belichick, just by being Bill Belichick, has floated from UNC fans
just,
right now.
We're going to find out when football season actually happens. I mean, so we still got a couple months before they're on campus, and then we'll see.
It's also true. If Bill comes out and they go 7-0 to start the year, all those same UNC fans will probably be like, hell yeah, we loved him the whole time.
I'm just talking about you can see if she's hanging around practice or not.
I mean, that's also fair. All right, let's take a break. Back after this, the Rob Brown Show rolls on. It's the Fan Upstate. Pete Thamel was on the Greg McElroy podcast and addressed the future of conference championship weekend with the possible expansion of the college football playoff. The conference championship game format, roughly, dates back to around 1992 when the SEC popularized the league championship. And since then, conference championship games have been a hallmark for conferences all year, every year. Pete Thamel said on the McElroy pod, quote, I think one conversation going on right now is a philosophical one on conference championship games. We saw a decrease in relevancy of conference championship games last year, just simply put, and this is a lot like a little bit of microcosm of college athletics in itself. Thamel will go on to say that the dilemma facing the conference championship games right now is that in an ongoing pursuit to squeeze more out of the entire college football product at large, the game is changing on a smaller scale in a lot of different areas. Thamel said that the sport has already been measurably transformed by the implementation of NIL reform and reworking of the transfer portal, and went on to say, quote, "The inevitable phasing out of relevancy of conference championship games, we have empirical evidence of it, and it's staring us right in the face. And do these leagues, which, by the way, it's very valuable inventory, it's very valuable for the league, it's a moneymaker, huge moneymaker, premium ticket, big event, do they pivot and say, with college football playoff automatic qualifiers, which seemingly are on the way, do we do 4 play-in games, go 1 through 8 to 7, and then have the in case of one of your top dogs gets upset, you still have the 3 at-large on the back end to sneak them in." He went on to say that the concept of various college football think tanks are already looking to tackle this changing landscape. He said, quote, "That would be giving up a premium property to your television partner that would clearly want it. And it would also be giving up a big gate moneymaker. And look, like, you guys have been to a lot of SEC championship games like I have. That's an event, man. Whoever's there owns Atlanta that weekend. Unwinding that is easy to say looking at a spreadsheet. It's hard to emotionally unwind for something like that, even though seemingly we are on the course for these games being less relevant." I think it's a conversation that's going to continue to evolve right now. My opinion is, I don't honestly think we'll get there. I think it will go. There will be a conference championship game with guarantees, and there will be play-in games, if you will, on the others. I'm going to tie this to a question that was asked in our live stream chat section a little earlier in the show, when Jeff the Lawn Guy said, "What do you think about multiple games being taken away from a fan base with these out-of-country games that they may not be able to attend now?" I don't like doing this segment. I don't like putting this on the airwaves, but it is also the truth. College football fans are learning what NFL fans learned a long time ago, that you better love football a lot, because football does not love you. You better love the organizers of your favorite sport a lot, because they do not love you. The conference championship games have large, and for a long time, largely been a spectacle of some degree. Now, I will point out that this past year, I went up to Charlotte, North Carolina, the site of the Atlantic Coast Conference Championship game. And in attending that game, Clemson versus Southern Methodist University, I would say it was about 80%, 75% full. Good chunk of the upper deck was empty. And so while it is a valuable TV product, it is really only at this point. I can't speak for the Big Ten. I've never been to a Big Ten championship game, so I can't speak for it. The ACC championship game may be a big deal for the television partners, but it is not this grandiose to-do like the SEC title game is. I don't know if the Big Ten title game is more like the ACC title game, more like the SEC title game, or if it just depends on who's playing in it.
I think it depends on who's playing in it.
Probably
I really do. So if Clemson and North Carolina play this year, and they're both undefeated coming into that game, because I don't know if they play each other, or if each of them have like one loss, that's a big deal, and there would be a lot of people there.
You're probably right. You are probably right. There would probably be a more packed house. And again, I am not trying to write them off. They do play each other, by the way, on October 4th in Chapel Bill. I am not trying to write it off as a nothing burger by any stretch of the imagination. What I am saying is that at the end of the day, the objective is to make the most money out of the deal.
And also, we talked about this before, especially with expanding playoffs, people only have so much money and they have to decide, okay, do I want to go to this game or do I want to go to their actual playoff game if you know for sure they're making a playoff game?
Also true. And so if we expand to 14, 16, which I think is more likely, keeps you in that multiples of four so you can have no buys in the opening round. If we do expand to 16 games and we do end up with, as I suspect that we will, the automatic qualifier system, the thought right now is that within a few years, we will end up at 16 teams. The SEC and Big Ten will each get four teams in. The ACC, the Big Ten or Big 12, will each get two teams in, and then we'll have a couple of other AQ paths elsewhere. Well, if the ACC is going to get two teams in, then theoretically, both teams from the conference championship are going to go. And if both teams are going to go from the conference championship game, does that game hold the same weight with fans anymore? Does that game hold any sort of relevance to you if you look and you go, okay, North Carolina's playing Clemson for the ACC title game. Both of them have earned an AQ into the playoffs. Do we care anymore? Is that something we are going to jump into? Because that answer is going to determine if there are still conference championship games. The ACC will not want it to go away. The SEC will not want it to go away. The Big Ten, the Big 12, they will not want their championship games to go away because, as Pete Thamel just pointed out, they are still moneymakers for the conference, whether it is gate and revenue, whether it is, like in the case of the SEC, a week's worth of festivities that end up dominating downtown Atlanta, Georgia, whether it is the TV, television broadcast partner, revenue sharing, whatever the case might be. What would you look for? Like, what would be the thing that keeps it alive? And the answer is, do you guys keep watching and participating in conference championship games? If Clemson already has a bid, if they finish inside of that, let's say, top eight. By the way, Clemson really highly regarded by most of the early preseason prognostications. If they're a top four, top five team, you know that AQ belongs to them. Number one, do you care about the ACC title game? Number two, while I do not think this would be the case with Dabo Swinney, how many teams would effectively throw a conference championship game in order to make sure that they are as healthy as possible when the playoffs start? Let's not take a risk that our Heisman finalist, wide receiver, running back, quarterback, whatever, pops an ACL in a game that if we win, we don't really get anything out of it. If we lose, it doesn't stop us from going to the playoffs. But if we lose a guy, if a guy can't go to the playoffs because he gets seriously hurt in that game, now all of a sudden we've lost the lot. So I get where Thamel's coming from. I agree with Thamel. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about the viability of conference championship playoffs. I honestly think that the concept that Pete Thamel trotted out there is what is going to end up happening. It is going to be more of a playoff for the automatic qualifiers than it is going to be a conference championship game. In the SEC, 1v4, 2v3, winners of those two games are going. They got four buy-in spots. Does that even matter? Maybe they go 1 through 8. I don't know. I don't know how they play it out. But I do think within the next handful of years, conference championship games are going to become largely irrelevant. And I think that because they kind of already have. Clemson wins the ACC last year. What'd they get? They didn't get a special treatment in the playoff. They had to go on the road. They lost. SMU played and lost the ACC title game. What'd they get? A trip to the playoffs. Who cares, right? Let's take a break. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show with the Fan Upstate.